became a nation, just like God promised, and how they were set up, and how they became dukes, and how they ran the kings of that mountain off, and they became dukes. So they weren't no more kings, but they were dukes, and they were family-orientated. Each group of families took care of their own families and took care of their own business and took care of, like, family or everybody in your household, or everybody in my household would have, like, our own little cities or our own things, and we take care of our own business. But when trouble came, they all came together. Kind of like came together when they needed it. Yes, sir, it was basically the same thing. But God is showing here, He set up. But we also run into, when we look at Edom, we're going to find out where some of the bad guys come from also. Because we know that Israel ends up fighting Edom, and Amalek comes out of this bunch of families. And we know what happened to Amalek. He went and attacked Israel from behind and killed the weak and the sicklings and all those folks. And then, of course, Saul was told, you go and wipe them out. And of course, Saul
didn't go do it. So all these things, eventually, they all
mesh back together as we go. So we're going to read over this chapter. And we may see a little something in it as we go. Now, these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Esau took his wife of the daughters of Canaan, Ada, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite,
and Ahoabama, the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Zibion, the Hivite. Now, we know good and well that God wasn't for them doing that. In fact, it made Isaac mad when Esau went and married these women from Canaan and the Hittites and the Hivites. And so that wasn't blessed by God. And then he says he took and went to Beshemoth, Ishmael's daughter, sister of Nehoth, and Ada bare him Esau, Eliphaz. Now, this is not the same Eliphaz that went to see Job. Now, some people may think so, but this is not the same guy. There was at least two of them. One went to see Job, and one was right here. Now, they're probably in about the same time frame there now, because we know that Job was written either before Genesis or right around the time of Genesis. So we know that Job is an old book, but this is probably not the same Eliphaz. And Beshemoth bare Reuel. And Aholabama bare Jeush and Jaalam and Kor. These are the sons of Esau, which were born unto him in the land of Canaan. So these were born in the land before he moved on to Mount Seir over there. So these were some of the first children he had, some of the first wives he had. And Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters and all the persons of his house and his cattle and all the beasts of all his substance, which he had gotten in the land of Canaan, and he went into the country away from the face of his brother, not because they were fighting, but because all their substances together became more than they and the other people who lived in the land could live together, kind of like Abraham and Lot. So Esau says, all right, family, folks, we got a pile of cows and a pile of sheep and a pile of stuff, and they got a pile of stuff, and if we don't do something soon, there's not going to be no grass for anybody. So it's time for us to take our stuff and move on over here to this mountain over here. So they loaded up all their stuff, all of his wives, and all of his families, and all his cattle, and dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Edom meaning red, or named after the pottage or whatever, or some people think after his hair was red, or after his ruddy look when he came out when he was born. But anyways, he was named for the redness of either the pottage or for his hair color. And it says, and these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites, or as my wife would say, Edomites, in Mount Seir. Now, this mountain was not vacant when they moved there. So when they moved there, they had to start pushing some folks off of there. So Mount Seir, these are the names of the sons of Eliphaz, the son of Ada, the wife of Esau, Reuel, the son of Beshemath, the wife of Esau. And the sons of Eliphaz were Teman, Omar, Zepho, and Gadam, and Kenaz. And Temah was the concubine of Eliphaz, Esau's son, and she bare to Eliphaz Amalek. There's that Amalek word. Mark that down somewhere because he's troubled down the road. These were the sons of Ada, Esau's wife. So Amalek starts right here, but by being the daughter of a concubine of one of Esau's sons. And it gets kind of crazy there. That's what I said. Some of these commentaries went all over the place with that. And there's not really a lot that they know about these folks. I'm going to tell you, the commentary says, they'll tell you all this stuff. Maybe this happened, maybe that happened, but we really don't know these guys, but this is what we do know. That's why I'm just going to basically just going to read this chapter, because here's what I do know. What it says right here. And it says, so we know that Amalek, these was started right here. And these are the sons of Ada, the Esau's wife. And these are the sons of Reuel, Nahath, and Zerah, Shema, and Mizar. These were the sons of Beshemath, Esau's wife. And these are the sons of Aholibamah, the daughter of Anna, and that's a man now, not a girl, the daughter of Zibeon, Esau's wife, which she bare Esau, Jeish, and Jaalam, and Korah. Boy, and they named these so many times that y'all trying to see if I would say them the same way three times in a row. And these were dukes on the son of Esau, the son of Eliphaz, the firstborn of Esau, Duke Teman, Duke Omar, Duke Zepho, and Duke Kenaz. Now we're going to stop there. These dukes, they're not kings, they're not governor. They're like governors or magistrates over provinces or whatever. But when they went in, they pushed out the king that was there. And so instead of having a king rule over them, they had tribal or family rule over them. And instead of them being called princes or whatever, they had dukes. And so the Edomites all had dukes. Duke Korah, Duke Gatham, and Duke Amalek of Edom. These were the sons of Ada. And these are the sons of Reuel, Esau's sons, Duke Nahath, Duke Zara, Duke Shama, Duke Mizza. These are the dukes that came from Reuel in the land of Edom. These are the sons of Beshemath, Esau's wife. And these are the sons of Aholibamah, Esau's wife, Duke Jeish, Duke Jaalam, Duke Korah. These were the dukes that came from Aholibamah, the daughter of Anna, Esau's wife. And these are the sons of Esau, who is Edom, and these are their dukes. These are the sons of Seir. Now we change them from the Edomites now to the Seirites or the Horites. And it says, these are the sons of Seir, who inhabited the land. So these are the people who lived there before Edom got there. So this is the ones who the Edomites come in, they intermingle with, and they finally overpower them by outraising them. And finally the Seirites or the Horites get overtaken by the Edomites. Whew. I'm going to get them mics down here in a minute. And these are the sons of Seir the Horite, who inhabited the land, Lothan, and Shobal, and Zibeon, and Anna. And Dishon and Ezer, and Dishon, these are the dukes of the Horites and the children of Seir in the land of Edom. Boy, that's a lot of speaking. I'm glad we're just going to read this chapter. And the children of Lothan were Horai and Hemam and Lotam, sister of Timnah. And the children of Shubal were these, Alvan and Manahath and Ebal and Shifu and Onam. And these are the children of Zibeon, both Ahijah and Anna. And this was that Anna that found the mules in the wilderness, and he fed the asses of Zibeon, his father. Now, I did have one slight thing about these mules. I don't know if it's really the truth or not, but mules are one of the animals that is not naturally made. And so this is the first time we have mentioned the mules. Mules are where you take a donkey to a mare and it makes a mule. So it's a forced breeding, because normally a donkey won't go that way and normally a mare won't go that way, but if you force them, they will, and it makes the mule. So it says here that this guy is the guy who came up with mules. Just in case y'all need a footnote on mules somewhere. It says, let me get find where I was. And Zibeon was his father. And the children of Anna were these: Dishon and Aholibama, the daughter of Anna. And these are the children of Dishon: Hemdan and Ishban and Ithran and Cheran. And the children of Ezer are these: Bilhan and Zavan and Achan. And the children of Ishan are these: Uz and Aran. These are the dukes which came out of the Horites: Duke Dan, Duke Shubal, Duke Zibeon, Duke Anna, Duke Dishan, Duke Ezer, Duke Dishan. These are the dukes which came of the Hori among their dukes in the land of Seir. So we see that the Edomites have their dukes, and the Syrians have their, not Syrians, whatever I called their name a while ago. Let's see where it was. Anyways, they have their dukes. And they're all inhabited in this one mountain up there. And these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before they reigned any king over the children of Israel. So there were kings in that land before the Edomites and before the Horites pushed them out. And these ruled in that land, and the kings were before there were any kings in Israel. So in other words, this is way before, 400 years or so before Israel gets a king. And it says here, and these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before there reigned any kings over the children of Israel. And Bela the son of Beor reigned in Edom, and the name of the city was Din Haba. And Bela died, and Jobab the son of Zerah of Bozrah reigned in his stead. And like I'm saying, there's not a lot to go on in this chapter where these guys came from or who they were, other than their names and what happened to them. And Jobal died, Husham of the land of Temani reigned in his stead. And Husham died, and Hadad the son of Bedad, who smote Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his stead, and the name of his city was Avith. And Hadad died, and Shammah and Meshrikah reigned in his stead. And Shammah died, and Saul of Rehoboth by the river reigned in his stead. And Saul died, and Bela Manah the son of Achbor reigned in his stead. And Bela Manah the son of Achbor died, and Hadar reigned in his stead, and the name of his city was Pau, and his wife's name was Methabel, the daughter of Matred, the daughter of Mezabah. And these are the names of the dukes that came to Esau among their families after their places by their names: Duke Timnah, Duke Alva, Duke Jepheth, Duke Aholibama, Duke Elah, Duke Pinion, Duke Kinza, Duke Timnah, Duke Mizbal, Duke Magdiel, Duke Iran. These are the dukes of Edom, according to their habitations in the land of their possession. He is Esau, the father of the Edomites. That's a lot of words. Yeah. Because a lot of that's the same people over and over just showing. But anyways, that's all we're going to do in Genesis for tonight. Because I'm going to let y'all study that one out and figure them guys out all by yourselves. And whichever way you want to go, this one concubine with that one, and this one concubine with that one, y'all go with it. But I would like to go to Psalms. Psalms? Psalms. Palms. Leaving? Psalms 136. Because we're giving thanks tonight, because the Lord is good. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for He is good, for His mercy endureth forever. Man, His mercy. If it wasn't for mercy, we'd all be wiped clean out. We probably never would have been, because if it hadn't been for mercy way back with Adam and Eve, we'd have never been. So, for His mercy endureth forever. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord of gods, or the God of gods, for His mercy endureth forever. In other words, He's not saying that there's more than one God, but He's saying if you got a God or an imaginary God or something you made up, He is the God of gods. There is no God above Him. He is all God. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord of lords, for His mercy endureth forever. To Him alone doeth great wonders, for His mercy endureth forever. Man, we've got a God who's full of mercy. To Him that by wisdom made the heavens, for His mercy endureth forever. And I was looking over some of the sermons that Paul preached. Paul almost always, and Peter too, almost always went through creation. Every time he preached or whatever he taught, he always goes all the way back to creation and brings them through the pilgrimage and everything else, because he always wants to prove this is the God who made everything. This is the God who is over everything. This is the God who is in control of everything. This is the God who created all that there is. And His mercy endures forever. All those great stuff. And that's why when we preach or when we do things, it's not bad to always bring up the creation story and things like that, because it brings back to life that this God that we talk about has all power, all strength, all ability. To Him that by wisdom made the heavens, for His mercy endureth forever. And He didn't even have to think about that. As you brought up the other day, we talk about by wisdom, He thought up how to make this fit to this, how a leaf goes on this tree, and how the mountain's going to have this kind of that. He did it and didn't even have to think about it. He did it by pure wisdom, pure understanding, pure. He was all over it. For His mercy endureth there forever. To Him that stretches out the earth above the waters, for His mercy endureth forever. He's the one that put the land forms and the land masses all right where they're at. Made them each one look just like they look. They talk about that Grand Canyon. Oh, in another million years it'll be this deep or whatever. It ain't got no deeper since I've been here. And they talk about it's going to be this big and this gully's going to be that deep or whatever. As far as I can tell, it's been about the same for the last couple hundred years. So why is it going to get so drastically deeper than a million? What's it going to do, go under the ocean? I don't know. For his mercy endureth forever. To him that made the lights, for his mercy endureth forever. He made the sun, he made the moon, he placed the stars all over the place. He put everything in their spots. For his mercy endureth forever. To him that made the great lights, for his mercy endureth forever. The sun that ruleth by day, for his mercy endureth forever. Could you think about a world without a sun? That would be kind of dull, and it'd be like living in a cave forever and ever, for his mercy endureth forever. For the moon, could you imagine? I kind of looked at the moon last night. I said, man, the moon's almost full. It's going to be a terrible hunting day. But for the moon, for his mercy endureth forever. It cycles. It goes through its times. It goes through its stages. One day it's full, and the next day you can't even see it. But it's still there. For his mercy endureth forever. It makes the seasons go by. For the moon, the stars that rule by night, for his mercy endureth forever. To him that smote Egypt in their firstborn, for his mercy endureth forever. He could have just wiped them all the way out, but instead he took all the firstborn. And then he had a plan for the Israelites to take the firstborn. But he says, instead of taking all the firstborn, y'all count them all up and I'll take the Levites. And then they put a tax on them for what was missing of the amount of numbers. So they all, instead of him having the firstborn of every tribe, he took all of the Levites and says, I'll take them as mine. That's my offering, my firstborn. And he says, he smote the firstborn in Egypt, for his mercy endureth forever. He could have just wiped them all out. He could have just finished them up. And he brought out Israel from among them, for his mercy endureth forever. He heard their cries. He heard their pleas. But he also had a plan before there ever was a plan. Before they ever cried, he had a plan. People say, yeah, he heard them crying, so he went and rescued them. He knew he was going to rescue them when he did. But he knew they would also be crying by the time he did. They were in bondage. They were building, making bricks and making mortar and stomping them. And they were near about went from being a free bunch into being a bunch of slaves for the Egyptians. And they were being pushed down because the Egyptians says, if these people keep growing, they'll outnumber us. So we got to figure out a way to keep them from growing. And he tried killing their children. He tried doing all kinds of things to them, working them to death. And finally they just cried out to God and says, God, have mercy on us. And guess what? His mercy endureth forever. It says, with a strong hand and with a stretched out arm, for his mercy endureth forever. People don't understand that, but them plagues were just the fingers of God touching those people. With a strong arm, he grabbed a hold of Pharaoh. With a strong arm, he says, I will harden your heart. You'll continue to get hard until I am ready to take these people out of here, and I will take total vengeance on you. It's amazing that God puts the Israelites in a place, and he says, now when they get through mistreating you, I'm using them to wake you up. I'm using them to punish you. I'm using them to straighten you out. But when they get through mistreating you, then I'm going to take and whip them bad for what they did to you. You said, huh? Yeah. God says, I'm going to use them to punish you. He does the same thing with us. He uses people to get to us sometime. But those people who take advantage of us, God's going to take advantage of them one day. It says here, with a strong hand, with a stretched out arm, for his mercy endureth forever. In other words, playing with Egypt was just like twiddling his fingers through them. Them little plagues was just play for him. To him which divided the Red Sea into parts. He didn't go to a shallow end, did he? He divided it into parts. That was a part of the Red Sea was over here and a part of the Red Sea was over there. And we don't know how wide it had to be for all those guys to get across in one night, but I'm sure it was wide enough that they could go through there. They weren't going through single file. They were probably going through a tribe at a time near about, or what have you. And that, they were pretty wide. From what I remember of the tribes, they were pretty good square. And they went on through there. He says he parted the Red Sea in parts, for his mercy endureth forever. And he made Israel to pass through the midst of it. The midst, that sounds like the middle. Midst, you know, when you're in the midst of something, you're in the middle of it. So if you're in the midst of the Red Sea, we've got an alley right down here, down the middle. That's the midst of it right there. They didn't go up on the shallow end or on the other end and go around. They went right through the middle of it. And that's what my Bible says about it. In the midst of the Red Sea. It says, Israel passed through in the midst, for his mercy endureth forever. But overthrew Pharaoh and his host in the Red Sea, for his mercy endureth forever. And you say, he drowned them all. But yeah, that would have been a quick way out to cover them up, finish them all off. They're all covered in armor. They're going to drown real quick. He says, in the midst of the Red Sea, he took care of Pharaoh and his host. That don't mean his friends that came to visit. That means his army. His whole army. Whatever was left of everybody that was left that came with him to kill the Israelites in the middle of the Red Sea. When they were so far in that they couldn't go this away fast enough and they couldn't go that away fast enough. And they drowned right there in the midst of it. And I bet if they took one of them fancy gizmos that they go to find ships and stuff with, and probably already have, and they find all that armor and all them chariot parts and everything somewhere out there, they're going to say, we can't tell nobody this because that would mess up the story of us trying to say he went down to the other end. Because here's where they all ended up at. Because I guarantee you that armor and them chariot parts and everything, just like any other good wreck, is right there, right there. To him which led the people through the wilderness, for his mercy endureth forever. Would that be Moses, who led the people through the wilderness, who suffered with them for 40 years in the desert? To him who smote great kings, for his mercy endureth forever. When they brought them out of the desert, they fought the Moabites and the Edomites and the Horites and all those people as they were coming through to go to Canaan, who smote those great kings. God went before them and fought their battles up until they got the big head and wanted Saul. God went before them. For his mercy endureth forever. He smote the great kings. He slew famous kings. For his mercy endureth forever. Sihon, king of the Amorites, for his mercy endureth forever. And Og, the king of Bashan, for his mercy endureth forever. And he gave their land for a heritage, for his mercy endureth forever. Now you understand that when he took those people into Canaan, they were not the best people in the world. But he promised them this land. And he took this land from the people who were there because they had got more wicked and more ungodly than you could shake a stick at. But they also, he also told Israel, he said, look, if you get to acting like them, I'll take it away from you too. And he proved it when he took them out for a while. It says here, for his mercy endureth forever. He whipped Og, the king of Bashan. And he gave the land for a heritage, for his mercy endureth forever, even an heritage unto Israel, his servant, for his mercy endureth forever. In other words, he says, what did he say the other day? He's going to give them this land little by little so that the animals and stuff wouldn't overrun them and overtake them. So he pushed those Canaanites out a little at a time while Israel's growing. He pushed them out. All the Hivites and the Jebusites and all the other sites and rites pushed them all out little at a time until they could totally take over. Because if he had just went in there with that few thousand in that big old country, they wouldn't have been able to farm it or take care of it. They'd have been so scattered out, they'd have been overwhelmed by the animals, and the thorns and the thistles would have grew up around them. But they let them have it as they grew children, as they grew bigger and stronger, they took more and more and more. For his mercy endures forever. He won't give you more than you can handle. I guess that's where we get that from. He'll give you just enough to keep till you grow in the thing. And he gave it to his servants, who remember us in our low estate. That's one for us. For his mercy endureth forever. In our low estate, when we were lost, when we were undone, when we were ungodly, and when we were fighting against him and enmity with him, he remembered us. It didn't say he finally saw us, he remembered us. In other words, we were there already. He remembered. In our low estate. He hath redeemed us. Oh boy, that's a whole sermon right there. He hath redeemed us from our enemies, for his mercy endureth forever. That doesn't mean that he bought us from the devil. I know there's some people that might think that, well, God paid the devil off and bought us back. No, that ain't what happened. The devil never owned us. Although we acted like devil's children, he redeemed us to himself. He paid that price to himself. The price that Jesus paid was to God the Father. And he paid the full price. Whatever we were worth, Jesus Christ paid the full price for each one of us. He was, you were talking the other day how he was beaten and whipped and all that. And I was thinking the other day about forgiveness. Forgiveness is like if you punch me in the nose and it makes me bleed or whatever, and I say, brother, I forgive you, but I want you to understand, my nose hurts. I want you to understand, it bled. It wasn't a cheap forgiveness. It wasn't a free forgiveness. It wasn't something, well, it's okay, it didn't hurt that much. No. When Jesus was whipped, it hurt. When they ripped the hide off his back, it hurt. When they pulled his hair out of his beard, it hurt. The forgiveness that God gave us was not cheap. It wasn't, oh, they just don't know what they're doing, I forgive them. No, it cost our Savior painfully, dearly. And so when people think, oh, he just loves everybody. Oh, man, he hurt. He bled. His bones were jarred when they dropped that thing in the ground. I guarantee it shook his bones. It says here, he redeemed us from our enemies. He, for his mercy, endures forever. He paid the price. He furnished the sacrifice. He did it all. He did the whole work. And when it says from our enemies, mostly my worst enemy was me. He redeemed me from me. Because if it had been left up to me, I'd have kept on doing what I was doing. And you probably would have too. I don't know. But the thing is, he redeemed me from me, my worst enemy. He said, who giveth food to all flesh. When you think about that, every animal out there, God supplies a meal for every day. Every insect, every bug, every worm, you name it, everything out there that's created or consist, God feeds it every single day. He says, he giveth food to all flesh. That means for the redeemed and the unredeemed, as you said, for the saved, the unsaved, for the good, for the bad. God is benevolently kind or loving to all creation. To all creation. That doesn't mean he saves all creation, but he's benevolently kind to all creation. For his mercy endureth forever. We're not going to outdo his mercy. I got news for you. Then it says, oh, give thanks unto the God of heaven, for his mercy endureth forever. Now, like you said this a while ago, this is probably the most scriptural holiday that there is, Thanksgiving Day. And I don't know that we really consider all of that when we're giving thanks on Thanksgiving Day, but the fact is that his mercy is the reason that we're going to have Thanksgiving. His mercy is the reason we're going to be able to be with family members and stuff like that. His mercy is the reason we're going to be able to come back on Sunday and worship again. His mercy endures forever. It's his mercy. He saved us. I understand grace and mercy go along there together, but you got to have one before you get the other one. Mercy and grace go right there together. It says, by grace he saved us, for his mercy endureth forever. By grace he saved us. He didn't have to. He didn't owe us anything. In fact, he never owed any of us anything. I don't know where they come up with it. Well, he has to save you. He needs to forgive. You know, I mean, he made you. He's got to take you. No, he don't have to. I used to make things. I can make a piece of wood into a music box. I can make a piece of wood into a toilet seat. Same kind of wood, same thing, pecan, oak, whatever you want to call it. I can make that piece of wood whatever I want it to be. And when it says God out of the same lump made one unto honor and one unto dishonor, and the, you know what? That piece of wood didn't have a thing to say about it. It couldn't argue. It couldn't put up a fight. Now, I have had them blow apart my hand sometime, but the thing is, the wood didn't do that on purpose. It's because I cut it all which way. What I'm saying is, just like I can take a piece of wood and turn it into four or five different things, God can take that same lump of clay and make vessels to honor and vessels to dishonor. And he has not been ill to either one. He's been not been unjust to either one. And his mercy endureth forever. I mean, I just believe what the Bible says on that stuff. It says some vessels to honor and some vessels to dishonor. And he made them both to show his power and his mercy and his long-sufferingness. For his mercy endureth forever. Now, I want you guys tomorrow, tonight, sit down and just thank God for all the things that he's done for you and me too. I mean to do that myself. I'm not just putting this to you, I'm putting it to me too. Sometime tomorrow, just you need to get alone with God and just thank him, because his mercy endureth forever. Not just thank him for his goodness, but for his mercy. Because without the mercy, we'd not even know the goodness. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Brother Keith, why don't you dismiss us, please?